on maynard.com.au. Hey, you! Ladies and gentlemen, on the phone from Germany, I have Sonke Nitzel. Have I pronounced your name correctly?
Well, it's Sonke Nitzel, yeah.
Wow, only out by a little bit there. Well, and the book you've done with Harold Welzer and Jefferson Chase, you, of course, are currently the chair of international history at the London School of Economics, is Soldaten, the secret World War II transcripts of German prisoners of war. Now, what were you doing in the British National Archives in 2001 mucking around there? You obviously weren't there for a laugh. What were you doing where you found these transcripts?
Well, originally I was doing research for a book project on the German Navy, and especially I was looking for new sources on the mentality of German sailors. When I stumbled across these trove of undiscovered sources, and then this all changed my research path, and then I decided to go more broadly on doing research and writing on the German Wehrmacht. But the intention was to find something new on the German Navy.
And what you had found was secret transcripts, written transcripts of the recordings, of secret recordings of German POWs in Britain. Now, who made these recordings and why were they making them?
Well, the British discovered as early as in the First World War that human beings are a wonderful source of information because human beings can't keep secrets. And so the thousands, 10,000, hundreds of thousands of German prisoners of war were, even in the First World War, a very good source of information in interrogations. And the British decided, in the next war, the Second World War, even as early as March 39, before the war started, in the next war, we will have a combined detailed interrogation center. And in this special setup center, we will have hidden microphones. So the technique was more advanced than the First World War, and we want to get access to this information of these soldiers. And so they, after the war started in September 39, they set up the camp where, in the Tower of London, and with hidden microphones, and then they moved to the north of London. So this was the plan, to gather information.
I imagine in the 40s, the microphones were fairly large, they weren't easy to hide, and the recording, reel-to-reel recording, or even a transcription record, would be a fairly large apparatus back in those days.
Oh yeah, I mean, we are not in James Bond times, so the microphones, the hidden microphones were quite big, but I mean, the British were quite cunning, I have to say, and so they were able to hide them quite well, and there are incidents where one or two prisoners out of 14,000 prisoners discovered the microphones, but in the end they were so well hidden that almost nobody really discovered them. So, and again, it was because of the sound quality, it was problematic if there were more than two or three people in the room. So therefore, they had prisoner cells just for two people. And they were, I think, able to distinguish the voices.
What branch of British intelligence was doing this?
I mean, intelligence was something important, obviously. And if we talk about intelligence, we always think about ULTRA, breaking the German codes and so on, which was obviously very, very important. But I mean, human intelligence, getting information from spies and even more important from prisoners of war, were as important as signal intelligence. And combined human intelligence and signal intelligence, this was the powerful intelligence apparatus. So human was quite important, and these POWs were really a very, very important source of information.
I would expect that you would have got hours and hours of boring transcripts of men complaining about their food.
That's in theory true, but you must have in mind the technique was not that advanced that they were able to record everything. So they had wax plates, which had a recording time of 7 minutes. So the people in the monitoring room were trained to record only very important things, but very important things means everything on techniques, but also everything on morale, on atrocities, but leave out the stories about food and the British weather. We are very happy that the British had a very broad interpretation of what is important. And so therefore, you will not only find something on the German machine gun 42 or the 88 anti-aircraft gun, something like that, but also if they are talking on Hitler, on the Nazi regime, this also was recorded. So this is therefore a very, very good source, not only for military techniques, talking about weapons, fighters, but also talking about the regime, politics, and things like that.
And Sonka, tell me, what did you discover that differed from any historical record that we know of the German army during the Second World War?
Well, I mean, I think the first astonishing thing was that how they spoke and how often they spoke about the brutality of war. I mean, we obviously know about a great deal about German atrocities, but I think it's a different thing if you have just the number the Germans killed, I don't know, 10,000 Jews in place Y, or they killed 10,000 civilians in place X. And we have obviously all eyewitness reports, mainly after the war, but these soldiers were talking even sometimes 2-3 days after they were captured. So it's a very, very fresh memory. It's still a memory, but it's a very, very fresh memory. And this is sometimes, it's sometimes really shocking reports about all kinds of mass violence. Also about, say, pleasure in war and how nice it was to kill people or to gun down civilians. And this is a quite interesting aspect. We always think that soldiers suffer from war. Even nowadays, they suffer from war. It's bad, it's awful, they're losing comrades, fellow soldiers, and so on and so on. But these transcripts show us that people can really enjoy war. And it's not only about having a trauma coming back to war. It's only about, oh, it was a nice time, and we gunned them down. So this, I think, gives us a totally new insight in the perception of soldiers of mass violence, I think.
And how did the book go down in Germany with this emphasis on the fact that there might have been extra brutality? How was the book treated in Germany when it was released?
I think, we have a good part of the book is about atrocities, all kind of mass violence and so on. And I think the book was a painful book for the German audience. But interestingly, to put it more in an ironic way, the Germans really like atrocities somehow. So what do I mean with that? It's the German public is very much concentrated. If they speak about the Second World War, then they speak about atrocities. And generally, we don't have in the wider public a positive feeling towards the Wehrmacht. So there are no myths like in Britain, the Battle of Britain or Dunkirk or the Anzac myth in New Zealand and Australia. There's nothing left of these kinds of things in Germany. So if you talk about the Wehrmacht in the Second World War, you talk about atrocities. And so therefore, the book was regarded quite well, received quite well, positive. It's a new regarded as it deepened our knowledge about atrocities. But interestingly, nothing was discussed about what does it mean towards recent war, because we do have a chapter in the book comparing these experiences of the soldiers with experiences in Afghanistan or in Iraq with German soldiers, American soldiers, and we asked the question, was this kind of brutality, this kind of perception unique for German soldiers, or do we have similar things recently also? And we think, yes, there are similarities, and this was mostly ignored by the German public.
I found that the most fascinating part of Soldaten is where you are comparing some experiences of the Second World War to recent experiences. Do you think that once you get past a total war, once you immerse yourself into such a violent situation, that brutality is just inevitable?
I think so, because it's all about military aims, what did you want to achieve? And if you say we want to crush partisans, we want to crush a well-organized guerrilla organization, then you have, even after 45, all kinds of atrocities. Like My Lai in Vietnam, for example. And it's definitely not comparable, for example, to the German sector in Afghanistan. The Germans had 48 killed soldiers, and they're not having really military operations against the Taliban. And you can't compare this, obviously, with the Second World War. But if you have a really well-trained partisan guerrilla, and if you have an army trying to beat them, I think you always have these problems of killing civilians in great numbers what we had in Vietnam, for example. We had all raping women and then all these kinds of things. I mean, obviously, the Second World War was a very, very big war, very violent war, but we always must have in mind the counterinsurgency operations, for example, in Belarus, in North China, were huge in comparison to Afghanistan or even in comparison to Iraq or Vietnam. But, I mean, the elements of the brutality are still there. And although the American soldiers, for example, are living in a totally different society, they have a totally different frame of reference, yes, this is true. But I think these kinds of wars, guerrilla warfare, for example, they always lead to some special forms of violence, which is very much comparable, I think, to the Second World War. And I think the way how soldiers perceive mass violence, fighters, if you are a fighter pilot, for example, I think the fighter and fighter bomber pilots from NATO who flew over Libya, they have a very similar or comparable worldview to the German fighter pilots in the Second World War. They just want to achieve something. They want to destroy something. They want to shoot enemy planes down, destroy tanks. And I think nothing has changed so dramatically since then.
Yes, you said that the more removed the combatant is from the violence, the less they seem to care about it. The airmen are more they seem to be less, they're more callous.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's all about achieving a military goal. It's all about shooting down enemy aircraft and leaving beside any rules. And these are problems, these rules. When if you talk to, for example, soldiers in Afghanistan, German soldiers now, they want to fight against the Taliban, but they have these rules of engagement and they're annoyed about that. So if you really leave these rules of engagement out and say, well, let's fight and let's really destroy the Taliban, then you will definitely also have atrocities. So I'm absolutely convinced of that, because they always have a look on their military goal, on their military aim, and not about any Geneva Convention or something like that.
Now, Sonka, author of Soldaten, how does this bode for the future of warfare when we have even more remote action going on using drones and the drone culture of warfare?
Yeah, I mean, that's very interesting. It's again about achieving a military result, and the drones were used for achieving military results. And it's interesting that nobody in the military don't care about collateral damages. I mean, it's all about killing Taliban leaders, and nobody really talks about the problem, how many civilians do we kill? And it's also about the... if you, for example, have a look on the 10th anniversary of the war in Afghanistan, here in Germany or in the UK, everybody talked about their own victims, how many soldiers were killed, British soldiers, German soldiers, Australian soldiers. But nobody talked really about how many civilians were killed by NATO. And this is clear how your military purpose shaped the view. When you always want to achieve something, you don't have any casualties anymore with drones, and the rest doesn't matter.
Sonka, do you think there is an answer for any of this? Because war is so brutal, total war, particularly like the Second World War was so brutal. Yeah. The rules of engagement that are in place with several countries now, is that ever going to solve the problem, or by its very nature, it's always going to get ugly?
Well, I think, I mean, the question remains, what conclusion should we draw out of it? And I still think that the rules of engagement are very important. You can set rules, and you can. It's with the officer corps that these rules should be followed by every soldier. So the rules they are important, definitely. But there's always a problem, and especially, I'll give you one example in the German case. The rules of engagement for the German soldiers in the north of Afghanistan are so strict that in the end, the Germans don't wage a war. And obviously you can make the rules so strict that you don't have atrocities, but then you don't have a war. So, but if you want to have a war, if you want have military operations, really significant military operations against the Taliban, for example, then you can't have the rules of engagement that strict that you can avoid atrocities. So it's always a bit a combination of it, and you must accept that if you are going into a war, even if you're going into a big war, And if you want to achieve a military goal, if you want to destroy an enemy army, especially in counterinsurgency operations, there will always be atrocities and problems of war crimes. We still do not know how wars will be waged in the future, but I mean, there will be developments also on the other side, not only on our side, so it will be interesting to see.
That's one word for it. Look, thank you very much, Sonka Nitschke. The book is Soldaten, with Harold Veltzer and Jefferson Chase, the secret World War II transcripts of German POWs. And thank you very much for chatting with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
On maynard.com.au.